From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, our greatest threat to national security, a nation forsaken. Michael Maloof joins us. He'll tell us what it's all about. Here's what's happening. Well, the number of FBI background checks required for Americans buying guns set a record in December, indicating that more people may purchase one after the Connecticut school massacre, stirring interest in self-defense and prompting renewed talk of limits on firearms. John Lott, noted author, More Guns, Less Crime. John, so what do you think of this, big push, up 39%, setting this record?
Right. Well, even before Newton, we were already setting records. November was 24% higher than October. It was the highest November we had ever had. In fact, every month this last year was up by double digits over any previous amount for the same month in past years.
Now, the fact that John, that so many people are pushing to get guns, to get registered, I mean, what do they feel? What's inside of them?
Well, I think they're concerned, as you're pointing out, and I think the president's statement yesterday that one of the top two agenda items that he's going to have this year is going to be gun control. I think that just sparks additional fear. And, you know, it's not something that was emphasized during the campaign, but I think a lot of people suspected something like this would happen, and now their fears have come true. A lot of stores have sold out of guns, Walmart. Others have sold out of many types of guns that they carry. And prices are rising fairly dramatically, and people are thinking this may be the last chance they can get to buy many types of guns. And surely in some states where Illinois, Maryland have introduced bills that would ban all semi-automatic guns in those states.
Okay, John, thank you so much. John Lott, by the way. Subaru is recalling as many as 634,000 vehicles here in the United States for potential lighting problems that could lead to smoke or fire. The recall by Subaru potentially affects some Forester vehicles from model years 2009 through 2012, all legacy Outback vehicles from models year 2010 through 2012, and some Tribeca vehicles from model years 2006 through 2012. If you're on the list, you're going to get a notice. People watching their weight should pay closer attention to how much alcohol they drink, since it is second only to fat in terms of calorie content. According to the World Cancer Research Fund, alcohol makes up nearly 10% of the total calorie intake among drinkers. No sunspots actively flaring. The sun's X-ray output has flatlined and solar activity is low. Let's turn to the skies with Mitch Batras from EarthChangesMedia.com. It's supposed to be an active sun. What's going on here, Mitch?
Well, nobody knows quite sure because our data only goes back so far. Again, when we typically talk about records, historically, it's about 100 to 120 years. There is some data that goes back to the 16th century via telescopes. So we have a little bit a further range, maybe 300 to 500 years. But the cycles that are occurring now are in the range of 1,000 to 5,000 to 12,000 years. And I think that's exactly what's happening now. The sun is in a lull, but already it's starting to perk up. Today, there's 11 sunspot regions. And then I haven't had the chance to look at how many exact sunspots in each region, but there's 11 regions. If you looked up, you'd probably, with a large telescope, you'd probably see the dark spot. That would be a region. But within each region, there's a number of sunspots. So already it's sparking up. Right now there's class B and class C, relatively small, but they are producing coronal mass ejections. Matter of fact, a HALO CME was launched yesterday. But they are at a lower range. The Bs and Cs, I really have no expectation of any change to Earth's magnetic field. But those M-class flares, George, are having, even if it's a relatively low M-class flare, which is a medium, if you will, or moderate flare, is having an activity as an X-class right now, partly due to the magnetic field lessening, but also some other dynamics that we're not quite sure of. A breaking news that happened just yesterday is that they have had a new discovery, although you and I have been talking about it for a while, of powerful magnetic flow, outflow, coming from the Milky Way galactic center. They had no idea how strong it was. It's tenfold what they had ever imagined. So I think all this has to do with our times today, and I would certainly say this certainly goes hand in hand with the scholars who understand the Mayan calendar, but many other ancient texts as well, including our own here in the Americas, not only Mesoamerica, but also such as the Hopi and the Anunnaki and so forth. It's all coming into fruition. I think we got sidetracked with that one-day thing, that December 21st deal. That's come and gone, but the process is continuing on into, I always talk about the bell curve, and as all bell curves have, they have an apex, and that apex, I think, is going to last about 3 years, but we're coming up into that now.
Well, we're going to watch it closely, and you will too, Mitch. Thank you so much. Did the Russian prime minister really talk about ETs, and what did he mean by all of that? In a moment, Dr. Michael Sala joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Michael Sala with us, of course, pioneer in the development of exopolitics, author of Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life and Exopolitics, a Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. He was an assistant professor and a researcher at the American University. He's got a PhD in government from the University of Queensland in Australia. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Michael, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, George. I'm glad to be back.
Looking forward to a great new year. What's new in the world of exopolitics these days, Michael?
Well, there's so much happening now that people are really taking notice because of the discovery of exoplanets, that the scientific community is now looking at the almost certainty that there's going to be at least one planet out there with life, and that, of course, opens up the whole can of worms in terms of just how much life is out there and has it been visiting the Earth, and have we been told the truth?
Well, that's absolutely true. Now, the big topic of the day is several weeks ago, the Russian Prime Minister Medvedev was talking to reporters, some people say joking, other people say very serious, about extraterrestrials and the extraterrestrial presence. Explain that whole story for us, Michael.
Well, on December 7th, the Prime Minister gave an interview with five reporters, and that was aired. And after the interview was concluded, then some reporters began to ask him other questions, and he began to respond. And the camera was basically turned off, or the interview itself had formally ended, but the microphone was still live. So he was being recorded as he answered questions, and he was very frank on a number of topics, and also had a little bit of dry humor discussing Santa Claus, the Russian Santa Claus. And then he made these extraordinary comments in response to one of the reporters. And he was asked whether the Russian president was given any secret information concerning extraterrestrials among us, while he also received the nuclear briefcase and the information on the nuclear codes. And so that's when he gave a very elaborate, detailed response on exactly what it is that the Russian president is briefed on in terms of extraterrestrials among us, and that he then proceeded to refer to a film or a documentary. And initially it was reported by Reuters Press, and Reuters interpreted it as the Men in Black comedy, which is how many of us first heard of this. And so we, looking at the comments that Medvedev had made, many assumed that he must have been joking because he was referring to the comedy Men in Black, where there's, of course, a super secret agency that is set up to monitor extraterrestrial activities on Earth. And so that's where most media, basically all the Western media, interpreted Medvedev must have been joking, that surely no serving prime minister would refer to a comedy to illuminate what is in fact Russian policy or world policy concerning a sensitive topic such as this. And so that's where it sat, and many of us were trying to grapple with whether or not he was joking, whether he was half serious, whether he was kind of like releasing valid information and mixing it up with a little bit of humor. And so people were kind of caught up on that debate. But most of the Western media had kind of moved on because they assumed that this was just a joke. Well, then on the 18th of December, only a couple of weeks ago, a video was translated, and that was a Russian documentary by the same name, Men in Black. And so then what emerged was that, in fact, this was what he was in, this is the documentary that he was referring to. And the initial translation of Medvedev's comments actually make it clear that he was referring not to the Western Hollywood film, but to this Russian documentary.
Which was a serious documentary, wasn't it?
Sure was. I mean, it really had some important information in there. It covered the UFO crash in Roswell. It covered the interception of Air Force jets of UFOs. It covered the UFOs interfering with nuclear weapons facilities. And most importantly, this is the one that really got my attention, was where that documentary started talking about extraterrestrial having reached agreements with the U.S. government and actually having established bases. The documentary goes on to refer to some people such as Charles Hall, that I know that's been a guest on Coast some time ago, done some extensive research on him. And Charles Hall wrote three volumes, I think it's three or maybe even four volumes, basically expanding on his knowledge of secret agreements with extraterrestrials reached between the U.S. government and the extraterrestrials, where the extraterrestrials had the right to establish bases on remote military facilities in the U.S. So Hall talked about that, and this documentary discussed that. And then finally, really just opening up this issue wide open, was the documentary talked about President Eisenhower having met with extraterrestrials. So here's a documentary really going into some of these issues that I and other researchers in the exopolitics field have been covering for a decade or more now. And here's this documentary discussing it all. And the most important thing was that the Russian Prime Minister, former President Medvedev, was giving it an implicit endorsement, if indeed this is the documentary that he was referring to.
The reporter, Michael, that even asked him the question, why would he do that? Most people don't, you know, or if they do it, they do it in tongue-in-cheek with a government leader. But this reporter seemed to be pretty serious.
Well, she certainly was. She's a reporter with one of the basically the biggest private television network there in Russia, REN-TV. And interestingly, that was the same television network that aired the documentary that Medvedev had referred to during his comments. So he was getting a question from a Russian reporter whose network had already aired a very important documentary on UFOs. And quite interestingly, only a month earlier, one prominent UFO researcher, Dr. Bruce McAbee, was approached by the same network to give an interview and respond to some questions for a forthcoming interview. So this question that was put to Medvedev may very well be part of the research and may actually appear in this upcoming documentary in Russia. So it seems that the Russians are very open to having the UFO issue discussed in a serious way. And most importantly, the Russian leaders are capable of making some very important comments. And this echoes what happened in May of 2010, when a governor of a Russian republic basically went on air and gave an interview in one of the most popular television shows there in Russia, and he commented about his own extraterrestrial contact experience. And so here you have another case of a prominent Russian leader serving. We're not talking about retired leaders, as often happens in the West. We're talking about serving politicians openly discussing UFOs, extraterrestrials with the media. And this is really where people like myself get excited, because what we have here is a form of disclosure that's coming from the international community. And so this is something to really follow closely.
Let's talk a little bit more about what's going on in the UFO community these days, Michael, as well, beyond just this incredible story. Are we slowly being softened up for some kind of an announcement by somebody?
Well, definitely there are forces out there in the international community that do want disclosure to go forward. One of the things that this Russian documentary makes clear is the way in which the U.S. military authorities have been at the forefront of controlling this issue, that they get the lion's share of the technology, that these bases, these agreements that have been reached basically involve U.S. military authorities. The Russian documentary doesn't talk about these agreements being reached with Russian or Chinese or Indian, Brazilian or any other government. It's the agreements are with the U.S. And so the agreements involve technology exchanges, certain resources are being taken off planet. So, of course, you know, from the perspective of the international community, I mean, they can't be happy about this. I mean, why would Russia, why would China, why would any major international country be happy with a situation where a major rival is getting the lion's share of technology, they are communicating with extraterrestrials directly, reaching agreements. So they can't be happy about that. And basically, I think that these politicians in other countries, they understand that as long as this issue remains black, it remains a covert, then they just have to take the U.S. on its word that this technology is being shared and that that their interests are being represented by whatever the U.S. is doing behind the scenes. So I think that these major countries are very nervous about the way in which the ET issue is being controlled by the U.S. And so they are leaking left, right, and center. They are trying to get the information out there because ultimately, if this issue goes white, in other words, it becomes an open access issue where the international community, the media, parliaments, and so forth can learn about these issues, then the people that stand to gain the most is major nations who can now move forward in getting their hands on some of this technology.
Are we going to get whistleblowers that come forward? We have had in the past, but are we going to get more and more of those to do this too?
Well, there's been a steady stream of whistleblowers in the U.S. coming forward. I mean, this really hasn't slowed down. I mean, first you had great work by the Disclosure Project with Stephen Greer, and then right. There are others, Paula Harris, and of course Project Camelot, where whistleblowers are coming forward approaching these people. And so we've had a steady stream of whistleblowers coming forward. Unfortunately, the Obama administration, I was one of those at the very beginning that was very enthusiastic about President Obama, that he came out at first with some policies saying that he was going to strengthen freedom of information, make it easier for whistleblowers to come forward and reveal what was going on. So I was very encouraged by that and thought, well, this is going to be really a time when we see more whistleblowers come forward. But unfortunately, it's been the opposite. They've tightened the screws on whistleblowers coming forward. Anyone that does come forward to release classified information, they stand some big risks in terms of penalties now. And unfortunately, the Obama administration just hasn't given the support to whistleblowers to come forward. Mm-hmm. So what this has done is this has kept serving military whistleblowers from coming forward. Retired whistleblowers, people who have worked in the military, the corporate world, and they can come forward. The most they have to lose is retirement benefits and so forth, but even in that case, we've seen that that hasn't happened. But anyone that is serving, that has a current position, I mean, they're just not going to come forward because there's no protection for them.
No, but Michael, also though, there has never been an administration that has allowed whistleblowers to come forward. They all hold back, don't they?
Well, there have been times. I mean, during the Clinton administration, I think, as you're aware, the Clinton administration behind the scenes did try very seriously to have this UFO issue come out. They worked actively behind the scenes to get the information. President Clinton is on the record for having asked or tasked someone he put into the Attorney General's office, Webster Hubble, to find out what it is that is known about UFOs. He tried to get the CIA director to give him information, find out what it was, and he just hit a brick wall. His whole administration hit a brick wall in terms of the official response. And so you have a case here of the kind of left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing.
Hold on for a second, Michael. We'll talk more about this, and we'll also take phone calls with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls for the remaining half hour with Dr. Michael Sella. But, Michael, what's so unusual about this planet? Why would extraterrestrials that I am convinced exist in this vast universe, why would they come here? What's their interest?
Well, we are basically a water world, so we have two-thirds of the surface with abundant water, and so that would be something that could be used by extraterrestrials for various resources, for various purposes. And one of the things that has been noticed by witnesses who often observe extraterrestrials in remote areas is that sometimes they take up enormous amounts of water into their craft. So water would be one of the things that the extraterrestrials would be needing. Another, of course, is our tremendous biological diversity. You know, we've got close to 7 billion people on the planet, an incredible abundance of different forms of life, both terrestrial and in the oceans. And so we have an incredible genetic pool. And of course, those that have been coming on the show talking about the abductions have been discussing how the extraterrestrials have a keen interest in the genetic pool, manipulating genetics and being able to use genetics for various purposes. So they also have that great interest in human genetics and the genetics found in the wildlife and the fauna on the planet.
It is an incredible planet, isn't it?
Well, we are just so rich and so gifted with so much life, so much diversity, and I'm sure with extraterrestrials that come from worlds that are much drier than ours, and the limited life that would be there because of the lack of water, they come here and it must be just paradise for them.
Back to Medvedev for a moment. I wonder what he would say if he was asked the same question again today.
Well, that's really very interesting. I mean, he did give a very detailed response to the Russian reporter who asked him that question, and he hasn't to date retracted anything. His spokesperson hasn't said anything to say that he misspoke or anything like that. So I could only conclude that if he was asked the same question, that at least privately, I mean, he would probably say very much the same thing as he already has said. If he said it publicly, of course, that would be coordinated very much with the Russian security services and President Putin, if Putin himself wasn't going to say anything about this. So I think Medvedev said what he said off camera, because I really think he felt that was off camera, and so he was being very candid. But I think he said it because he wanted the Russian reporter to dig deeper, that he wanted her to know that as far as the government authorities were concerned, that what the Russian reporter and her network were doing was a good thing, that they wanted to give them tacit encouragement to go ahead, continue doing their research, continue producing documentaries, hard-hitting documentaries such as this Men in Black documentary. And incidentally, if viewers go to the article that you have linked up there on your website, they'll be able to watch that documentary, and I highly recommend that they watch it because of the content. And I really think Medvedev wanted the reporter to continue to do the work, get the network to just continue doing this kind of research, putting it out there, educating the Russian public, and also getting the world community informed about what is really going on. And when the Russians are officially ready to disclose, that they would do it through the official channels. But for now, I think I think Medvedev was doing it informally, just to basically give his clout, his imprimatur, that this was indeed a very real issue, and go for it.
Pretty dramatic, and I like the fact that you picked up on it, Michael. Let's take some calls. Bill in Hastings, Florida, first-time caller. Hi, Bill. You're on with Dr. Michael Sella on Coast to Coast.
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Good,
Thank
Bill.
Thank you, George, for having me on.
Sure thing.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, and like you said, the Russian government in this state is they're really jealous of the Americans because of the Grays and, you know, Area 52, 53, and et cetera. And I'm just frankly surprised at how there hasn't been a preemptive strike yet to get a hold of some of this amazing technology that we have in America.
All right. That was an interesting comment.
It's like the genetic splicing. Like, I am at risk right now in releasing the information that I have right now in my own home.
In what way? Tell me.
These secret societies that don't want the general public to know anything.
Well, you're on the phone with us now, Billy. What kind of information are you carrying around?
Very, very deep things.
Give me an example.
The Illuminati bloodline, I'm technically a part of.
You are part of the bloodline?
Technically, yes.
Okay.
I know a lot of Masonic secrets, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if they would cut me off right now, you know.
Well, I don't think they're going to do that to you. Hello? Bill? They got him. Rob, what do you think of that, Michael?
Well, very interesting. I mean, he talked about the genetic engineering that is going on, and that was one of the things that was discussed in depth in this Russian documentary. And, of course, if Medvedev was giving his imprimatur to that documentary, which I think he was, basically what was being communicated is that there's a lot of world governments that are very concerned about the genetic engineering that is happening behind the scenes, how the U.S. Military and the authorities that have been involved in these agreements have been a part of that and given permission for essentially citizens, private citizens, to be abducted and be put through these genetic programs that the extraterrestrials have been involved in. Now, you know, I just want to make the point, George, that not all extraterrestrials are involved in these genetic programs. I mean, I've been researching this issue for a number of years, and actually I just came back from a trip down to Peru where I spoke to a number of contactees down there, people who have had contacts with very friendly, human-looking, kind of spiritually oriented extraterrestrials who are not involved in this kind of genetic engineering. But nevertheless, there are a few groups of extraterrestrials that are involved in the genetic engineering, and these are the groups that the U.S. government have reached agreements with, that there have been meetings and agreements reached. And I think this is one of the things that concerns the international community, and certainly Medvedev's endorsement of the documentary suggests that the Russians themselves are very concerned about the genetic engineering that is happening.
Let's go to Val in Covina, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Val.
Hi, George. What a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you again, by the way, for the newsletter. I always enjoy it.
Oh, you're welcome. Sure thing.
All right. I should tell you, first of all, a little more than a year ago, you probably recall retired sergeant investigator of the Michigan State Police, Ingrid Dean. She wrote a book called Unexplained Incidents That Take Place for the Experiences of Military and Police Personnel.
Right.
Well, I was one of the stories in there where supporting somebody had come across a rather interesting incident, but after that took place, I was contacted by a number of people. The most interesting of which is with the story that I want to tell today is a ICBM missile maintenance worker. Not anybody can just do this. This is quite a skill in the Air Force, and it requires some of the top people that we have. This young man happened to have been stationed at Ellsworth when I was there.
Okay.
And by complete coincidence, we started discussing some aspects of the training that's involved in the delicate procedures of working around nuclear weaponry. We are inundated in a training program where you're told everything has to go a certain way, how you're held accountable, and you being a former Navy man, you know they don't spoon feed this to you. It's all, you know, you're going to do it right or you're not going to get it done at all. Then you're out.
Right.
It's that simple. Well, this former airman contacted me, and when we were discussing various aspects of the training, I had mentioned something that was almost a required story in every training class, that supposedly a missile crew had gone out to an ICBM site, and there's an access hatch, George, that's about 3.5 feet in circumference. The hatch itself, I'm not trying to be funny here, but it slightly resembles a stopper in a toilet. Of course, this thing weighs well over a ton, probably more than that. It has to be raised up mechanically.
Okay.
There is absolutely no way that anybody can do this and get access without a number of entities associated with the military being aware of it. But when I was going through training, they regaled us with a story about how some, you know, they disparaged the airmen who went out there. They left the hatch open was a longstanding story that were told to a number of crews. This was to admonish us to be doubly careful. Well, this other airman, who, by the way, is a regular listener to your show, told me he knew about that incident. And he went into a very succinct and careful and professional explanation. I've been wanting him to contact you. Better if he tells it in his way also. But how that's not possible, and he knew about the story. To the best of anybody's knowledge, of anybody I've contacted from that period of time, nobody knows of anybody in particular who were disciplined because of this incident. The thing about it is that with all the communication, with the number of staff, including security, and at least six, maybe even a dozen military personnel on the site when you're working on it, that you could just jump into your cars, regardless of the weather. It gets pretty nasty in South Dakota. You're going to just drive off and leave this hatch open without people being aware of it.
Okay, what's the significance, though, of keeping it open or closed?
Well, the thing about it is it provides, I have to be careful how I say this, it provides, let's say, access to the very sensitive systems that operate the ICBM. What this airman's insisting is that nobody could have done that. Your chances of winning the mega lottery was probably greater.
But somebody did, somewhere.
Somebody
right?
either did or, in his mind, nobody did at all. The question is, what happened? How did it get open? Now, for the military to basically tell its troops, you know, naughty, naughty, bad boys, you know, you got to remember, we don't want any more incidents like this. And they continue to purport this story. And yet this one airman very carefully paints a picture how that would be near impossible to do. But, you know, as I said before, the number of people on the site working at that particular moment, just don't jump in your cars and drive off and forget to close the hatch.
Right.
There's going to be the central security control. There's going to be trip advisory, base security. Everybody's on the net. And it's electronically monitored, not only at the base and at CSC, but also by the capsule offices that are underground at the various launch control facilities. What he's implying, and he's not talking about ETs, he's not talking about UFOs, he's talking about an unexplained incident. The Air Force would not want to talk about it at length for the simple reason that they don't have an explanation as to how the hatch got left open.
Well, and it's going to remain a mystery for a long, long time. You know, Michael, have you looked at the UFOs over our nuke sites?
I have looked at that, and certainly the testimony of people like Robert Salas has been something that has opened the door to a lot of researchers taking an interest in exactly why UFOs are doing what they're doing. One of the things that really interests me in relationship to the nuclear UFO issue is some of the whistleblowers that have come forward and talked about how nuclear weapons were aimed at the moon. And one of the things we recently had an official Air Force study discussed and released by the person who was responsible for putting it together, saying that there was an official Air Force plan to nuke the moon. But as far as he was concerned, the plan was scuttled. This was in the 1950s. But interestingly, Colonel Ross Dedrickson from the Disclosure Project, mm-hmm. he said that, in fact, there was an attempt to nuke the moon, that there was this effort to send one of these ICBMs all the way to the moon, and that it was destroyed in mid-flight by UFOs. So there's clearly a very important connection between UFOs and nuclear facilities, and there's been a lot of work done on that, and certainly we need to look at some of the implications for what happens when nuclear weapons are used not only in space, not only on Earth, but also in deep space.
Let's go to Grace in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Grace, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, this is fascinating. I wanted to ask you if you mentioned Biden, that he was in the loop. Was this when he was a senator? Was he on some kind of committee? Or is this now as vice president? And if it is as in his position now as vice president, obviously the president knows what's going on. And I'm wondering if being the president of all peoples of this nation, he has jurisdiction over the military. How come he just can't contact them and just tell them to spill the information? And as well, if the extraterrestrials are helping us in our technology, why hasn't it reached the point of them helping us, for instance, in water and air pollution? and things of, you know, I mean, vehicles, so personal vehicles. And there's got to be some other kind of fuel system that we could use so that we don't rely on gas. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Why don't they get involved, Michael?
Well, I mean, they certainly are already involved. I mean, there are so many people who have had experiences with extraterrestrials. We're talking about contactees who come forward with all of these incredible ideas about new energy, new technologies that would replace the fossil fuel industry. I mean, Nikola Tesla himself may well have been a contactee. I mean, he was probably the first person to come up with some of these alternative energy sources. So we've had a long series of people who have had experiences with ETs, with ideas of how we could develop alternatives to fossil fuels, clean up the air and so forth. But these contactees are hounded, they're discredited, the resources are denied to them. And so really what's happening is that the vested interests that want to keep the ET issue closed are also very much tied up with the pharmaceutical industry, with the oil and petroleum industries, and so they've been able to keep this something that doesn't come forward into the public arena.
Let's go to Port Angeles, Washington. Tom's with us, west of the Rockies. Tom, go ahead.
Welcome the guest. I can't help but feel that if I was the Russian Prime Minister Medvedev, I would like nothing better to enhance my name recognition in the West than to get on Coast to Coast on George Norrie's show with billions of listeners. Basically, what I'm saying is maybe the Russians are having a bit of fun with us. Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't think so. I mean, this is a really serious issue for a politician to go forward and talk about it. I mean, even to say it off air, I mean, just let's just assume that Medvedev wasn't taped, and even to say it off air to a reporter from a prominent television network that is doing shows on UFOs. I mean, why would he do that? Was he just having fun? I mean, he certainly was aware of the depth of the documentary that network had aired previously discussing these issues. So I think basically he's very concerned, and he's just signaling that the Russian leadership are not happy with the status quo, and they're wanting this information to come out. They're encouraging the television networks there to kind of investigate these issues more, put out more documentaries, and certainly in Russia, there's a lot of data that has come forward with the collapse of the Soviet Union. The KGB released a lot of files, so there's a lot of data there that the Soviets can use. And of course, you have even serving politicians in Russia, such as the politician Ilyushmenev, who was the governor of a Russian province, Kalmykia, who came forward and talked about his own experiences. So I think the Russians are really much more open to discussing this in a serious way.
Well, I think they are too. Michael, thank you so much. Dr. Michael Sala's website, exopolitics.org. When we come back, a nation forsaken EMP, the escalating threat of an American catastrophe. Michael Maloof joins us in a moment on Coast to Coast. Stay out.